I invite you to be seated now, and we will hear words that come to us from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 31, verses 9 through 13. Hear now these words. Then Moses wrote down this law and gave it to the priests and sons of Levi, who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, and to all the elders of Israel. Moses commanded them, every seventh year, in the scheduled year of remission, during the Festival of Booths, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God at the place that he will choose, you shall read this law before all Israel in their hearing. Assemble the people, men, women, and children, as well as the aliens residing in your towns, so that they may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God, and to observe diligently the words of this law, and so that their children who have not known it may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live in the land that you are crossing over the Jordan to possess. God's word for God's people. Thanks be to God.
Back somewhere around 1745, John Wesley put together a covenant service or a covenant renewal service for the Methodist societies. It was something they would do every so often. Eventually, they started doing it on the Sunday that was closest to the first Sunday of the year. And it included a lot of liturgy, which we are not doing today. But the opening prayer that Karen led would be a traditional prayer from the covenant service that we're going to end with Wesley's covenant prayer today. But it's a time of reflection to prepare ourselves for the coming year. So will you pray with me? Gracious God, as we come today to hear more about your love for us, I pray that the words of my mouth, but the meditations of all of our hearts here today would be acceptable to you. For Lord, you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. You know, the tradition for the beginning of the year is to make resolutions. That things like losing weight, or I'm going to get in shape this year, or heal some relationships, I'm going to work harder, or I'm going to work less, whatever it is. But a lot of times we make resolutions, and I do not, however. And it's not because I'm against them. I'm actually pretty good at making resolutions. It's the keeping the resolutions that I finally realized that after 2 weeks, I'm done with the resolution. And so I just don't make resolutions anymore. But this morning, we're in our worship, we're not here to make resolutions. Today is about renewing a covenant. And a covenant is different than resolutions. Because resolutions are about asking, what will I change in this coming year? But that's not the primary question of a covenant. To understand the primary question of the covenant, I'm going to give you just a little brief history of covenant in our scriptures. Now, earlier this year, Pastor Mitch down in Common Grace did 6 weeks on covenants, on six different covenants in the Bible. I'm going to do it in 6 minutes. I don't know what that says about us, but you're going to get the Reader's Digest version or the very short version of what his sermons were. If you want to know more, they're still online. You can go and get a whole 6 weeks of covenants. But a covenant is a formal agreement or treaty. I mean, it's one of those dominant images in our Bible. In fact, I did a little search for the word covenant on the computer. 407 times that word comes up in our scriptures. And so it's very dominant in our understanding of our relationship with God. But a covenant back then was very similar. The covenants that we find in the scriptures are very similar to covenants you would have found back in the ancient Near East. So you could define them as a contract or a promise or a relationship. And so just to take you through just a brief history, the first time we hear covenant in the scripture is in the story of Noah. And in Noah, it says this, "I establish my covenant with you that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of a flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." That's the first covenant we find in the Bible. And in fact, it's marked by putting the rainbow in the sky to be a reminder of that covenant, of what God has promised to do. A little later, we find the covenant made with Abraham, where God says to Abraham, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing." And so God makes a covenant with Abraham where he makes a promise that if you leave this land and go to the land that I will show you, not only will I give you that, I will make you a great nation, but also gives him a task, if you didn't notice, that you will be a blessing to others. We also get a covenant that God makes with King David. And in that covenant, it's a promise of an everlasting kingdom. "Your house and your kingdom shall be made sure forever before me. Your throne will be established forever." Now, this is important to us because we just went through Christmas where we talked about how Jesus had to be born in the line of King David because there was this promise 1,000 years earlier that God's kingdom would last forever. But the biggest covenant we find in the Hebrew Bible is the covenant God makes with Moses and the people during the Exodus, where it says, "Now therefore, if you obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession out of all the peoples." So Israel, in that moment, in this passage, in this event, find their identity in covenant. And not just in that, but throughout the Hebrew scriptures, but right in this event, the Exodus from Egypt, the giving of the law, the entering the promised land, this covenant identified them as children of God. "These are my people." And so that becomes their identity, their story, the event that defines who they are. And there's always two characteristics of covenant in biblical history. The first is, it's always initiated by God. None of these people went to God and said, "Hey, God, why don't we make a covenant together?" It was initiated, and God said, "I make a covenant with you," and says what that covenant will look like. And the second part of these covenants, they're always broken by the people. God doesn't break the covenants. The people break the covenants. There's something in our nature that keeps us from remaining faithful, and that we need to be reminded on a regular basis of God's gracious action. And that's why this passage that Karen read out of Deuteronomy is important. It didn't say covenant in it, but it's important to us because this comes at a point where Moses is about to die. And so he decides he needs to give some instructions to the people that he's been leading all this time and that he's helped create this covenant with God. And so he gives the instructions that every 7 years they are to get together and read the law of the covenant. And not so that people will know the law, although that might be a good thing that comes out of it, but that it reminds them who they are, They hear the law and they remember who they are. They remember their story. They remember what God has done for them and who they are. It's much bigger than just, we need to read these rules again. So let me give you an example. In case I haven't made it clear before in the 6 months that I've been here, I'm a pretty big Royals fan. In fact, I just bought my opening day tickets this past week for this year, which is a tradition that I've been doing with a friend of mine, Mark Holland, for the last 20-plus years. We go to opening day together. And it's even expanded a number of years ago. I started bringing my daughter with me, and now she goes to opening day. And some other people join us at times, but we always go to opening day, which means that I have watched some pretty bad baseball teams over the last 20 years. And a few good ones, but for the most part, well, we've had more losses than wins on those opening days, but I still love it. I love the pageantry of opening day at the K when they introduce the players and they have the flyovers and they have all of the pregame rituals that go just with that day. And, you know, I also have seen a number of losses, some painful. I remember being there on opening day when Luke Hochaver was the starting pitcher and gave up 7 runs in the first inning. And the game was over before we even got it started. Or I remember just last year when Zach Greinke pitched a gem of a game on opening day and lost 2-0 because we couldn't hit the ball. But I also got to see Alex Gordon's first at-bat for the Kansas City Royals. I remember it. It was against Curt Schilling, and he came up with the bases loaded for his first at-bat. This was going to be the beginning where he replaces George Brett as the face of the Royals, and he was going to be a hero, and he struck out to end the inning. But I still remember that. I also saw Bobby Witt's first game recently, and if you remember that, he got the game-winning hit in his very first game to start his career with the Royals. I also remember 2004. Maybe, you know, one of the best opening day games I've ever seen, where the Royals were playing Chicago and they got down 7-3 going into the 9th inning and came back, and Mindy Lopez. Do you remember Mindy Lopez? Most of you don't. That's the point. Mindy Lopez hits a home run in the bottom of the 9th to tie the game, and before we could get done cheering for that, Carlos Beltran comes up and hits another home run to win the game, and it was one of the most exciting opening days. Or the opening day in 2016, after they won the World Series, and we faced the New York Mets again. I have never been to a more exciting day, opening day baseball game than that one. And I remember the electricity in the crowd, and as the players were introduced, everyone got a standing ovation. In fact, 2 Mets even got standing ovations. Matt Harvey and Lucas Duda. Those were the ones that got standing ovations from the Royals fans because they remembered what they did for us in the World Series. My point is I love opening day, but it's not just about reminiscing about the Royals, which, well, I will do for as long as you want me to. But the point is that there's a connection here. Just a few years ago, I saw a documentary on the Kansas City Royals, but it was about the 1985 World Series. Now, they had made it before 2015, but I was watching it after that, so it changed a little bit, but it was about how that impacted the people. And here's a quote from the producer. Now, this was much after the 1985 World Series, but before they had won it again. And he said this about Kansas City people. He said, "What I found in Kansas City was how much baseball meant to the people, how much it still means to the people. When I interviewed people and talked to them, it became part of the bloodstream of their life, rather than an event apart from them. That, to me, is an endearing and gratifying thing, to see that 85 team is not something people remember in Kansas City. It's what they live with. It's what they take with them. It's what their children take with them." I think about that with my daughter, who wasn't alive in 1985 to see that. But she knows the story. It is a part of her, even though she wasn't there. And when the Royals started having success again in 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, did you notice there were some shirts that popped up that said, "I want to party like it's 1985. And it wasn't just that it was clever. It was about that memory that people remembered when things were going well with baseball in Kansas City. And why it's why I keep going back to the games. It's that memory of 1985 or 2015 that lives within me. And that's what Moses is instructing the people to do, to remember who you are. Remember your story. Pass it on to your children. Make sure that they know our story. Don't forget what God has done. Which brings us to that primary question of covenant. It's not, what am I going to change this year? What do I want to do better, or what do I want to cut out, or what do I want to start? It's the question of covenant is, to whom do I belong? And where do I place my hope? See, the answer to that question will determine how we live in the coming year, throughout our lives. To whom do I belong, and where do I place my hope? You know, this image of covenant is also important to Christians. It's not just something we find in the Hebrew Bible. We find it especially in the image of the communion meal, when Jesus breaks the bread and says, "This is my body given for you." And then he pours a cup and he says, "This is my blood of the new covenant, of the covenant God makes with you through this event." But it's not just in communion that we find that. I think one of the most powerful acts of covenant is baptism. This question of, to whom do I belong and where do I place my hope? You see, when Jesus is baptized by John in the Jordan River, the story tells us that the heavens opened up and the Spirit descended upon him like a dove. And a voice cries out, "This is my Son, with whom I am well pleased." It's a powerful moment of covenant making. And what's interesting here is that God says, "This is my Son, I claim this one, and I'm with whom I'm well pleased," before Jesus has done anything. I mean, he's grown up to this point, but what Jesus is gonna do, gathering his disciples, teaching of the faith, going to the cross, that's all in the future. But God already claims Jesus and says, "This is my Son." And see, I believe this. I believe this is not a unique event to Christ. I believe it is a model for our baptisms. That every time a person is baptized, I believe the heavens open up and God's Spirit descends and a voice says, "This is my child with whom I am well pleased." You are already claimed by God and told you are a person of worth, that you have a covenant with the living God, and it is the foundation of our Christian walk. And so this morning, I'm going to invite you to an act of covenant renewal. See, we believe in the United Methodist Church that baptism is just a one-time event. It's the initiation of a journey. It's God's claim on our lives. And so we don't get rebaptized because God has already claimed us. It's not the pastor who baptizes you. It's God's claim. And so it doesn't matter where you were baptized, how you were baptized. God has already made a promise and a covenant with you. And so we don't rebaptize. We remember our baptisms. And that we remember that God has claimed us as a child. And so we don't need to rebaptize, but we do need to remember who we are. Just like Moses told the Israelites, just like the people of Kansas City have to do all the time with the Royals because they seem to forget how good they're supposed to be. But just as we are as people of faith, that we need to remember our story and remember the covenant that God has made with us. And so that's your invitation today. Instead of beginning with New Year's resolutions this year, which probably won't keep anyway, let's begin by renewing our covenant. So what we have, like in communion, we have six stations here, and the ushers will help us get to those, but we have one for each section and then two in the back here for the back sections, and there'll be a pastor that is at each station. And we're going to invite you to come, and we'll place a little water on your forehead, and we'll say, "Remember your baptism and be thankful."